Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ben, may I lead off by saying on this fine Friday morning, given the fact you've had about 17 minutes sleep, how fresh as a daisy you look.
I am still running on adrenaline. I am going to crash very soon. I imagine by the time people are listening to this in a couple of hours, I'll be asleep.
Yeah, I'm really annoyed about that. We should have recorded this. We should have pushed you to the limit and seen if we could have recorded a show with you on up for 36 hours. Maybe then you would have made sense of some of the things that we saw last night. We're going to get straight down to business, break down round one. We've got a bumper mailbag. So fair play to a lot of you as well, gang, who've obviously been up all night watching it straight on X and other social media platforms as well, firing in questions. So we're going to try and get through as much of those as we can and weave it all together, Ben. Weave it all together. We have to start with the Falcons and with the pick that the pick heard around the world. Now, look, for those of you, and I'm sure everyone knows what the Falcons have done, but just in case you're waking up, you're just still getting your bearings. At number eight, pick eight, the Falcons take Michael Penix Jr., one of the second-tier first-round quarterbacks, if you will. We talked about the top four, and then there was Bo Nix and Penix Jr., who we thought would go first round, and of course, six ended up going in the first 12. We thought they would go first round, but maybe a little bit lower down. Certainly not at eight. Certainly not to the Falcons. There are two quite clear schools of thought going on here, Ben. Overwhelmingly, the Falcons are getting vilified for this. They signed Kirk Cousins to a four-year deal, $180 million. What the hell are they doing drafting a quarterback in round one at pick eight? This quarterback at pick eight. But there is a small but vocal minority that quite likes this, that sees this as a Rodgers, Jordan Love kind of play, or to my mind, maybe a little bit more closely, Mahomes and Alex Smith kind of play. So break it down. Where's your head at with this pick?
Okay, I hate the pick. Hate it. I can't tell you how much I hate this pick. Words can't express it. There is logic to drafting a young player when you know, okay, well, the quarterback we've got is coming to the end of his career. If they were looking at Kirk Cousins in the offseason and felt, here's a guy coming to the end of his career, we'll get a couple of years out of him, hopefully, don't spend the huge amounts of money they spent on him, right? If you were going to spend that, you must be totally committed to him for a certain number of time, right? So with Penix, he's also pretty old, actually, for a rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, I joked that he's so old that his son is draft eligible in 2030. Now, obviously, he's not super old, but he's old for a rookie, right?
That's not a bad thing, is it, for a quarterback coming in? We've seen a lot of issues when...
No, it could be fine.
Zach Wilson comes in, Darnold comes in too young, and they're too young for the league.
But part of the reason he's been there for so long is that, like, his injury problems through college really held him back. He was fantastic last season. His season for Washington last year was absolutely spectacular, and that's what has vaulted him up. Like, before that season, people thought he'd be drafted, but nowhere near the first round, right? Mm. He's a pretty good player. Now, I wouldn't have a first round grade on him, but I assumed he would go first round because it's a very quarterback hungry time in NFL history. He's not a top eight player. I get when you're desperate. I just don't understand using that level of
capital. We're looking at you, by the way, when Ben said that. Okay, so the number.
I get the logic. I completely disagree with if it's that player, a player of that caliber, and when you've paid Kirk Cousins that much, I don't see it's the situation. I get the idea of on paper, but when you look at the money involved, when you look at the tape, that doesn't add up. And the footage of in the draft room, it looked like a morgue in Atlanta compared with everywhere else, where everyone's high-fiving. Everyone thinks they've made the greatest pick in draft history. And at the Falcons, it was like, oh, what have we done? What are we doing?
Like, you know what, though? We have to point out Penix Jr.'s white shades definitely take the sartorial pick number one pick. Brilliant stuff from anyone that's going to get drafted wearing those whites. Incredible stuff. That, a pair of white R&As I had in the 90s that I was only talking about only yesterday. Ben Isaacs. Okay, you're in the very clear majority then of what the hell are the Falcons doing. Let me put the case for the defense here. And look, I don't think you can defend the reach. Penix at eight is a reach. Although I suppose that the one minor argument you could have there with obviously McCarthy and obviously Bo Nix, and they weren't quite sure if Penix was the guy they wanted to get, and they knew a number of teams were looking at, assuming that the top three went top three as they did, you can kind of understand why they just thought, we don't leave any to chance here. We're going to get our guy. Our guy at that number, I get, might be a big, big reach. But Cousins is coming off the back of a big injury. Yes, it's a four-year deal, but to your point, he's coming to the end of his career, but still, quite clearly, I think in everybody's estimation, assuming he recovers well from the injury, is going to be playing, is able to play at a pretty high level, which will move the Falcons on. A young offense, of course, which has London and Pitts and Cota, such Bijan, such great talent around that can mature over the next couple of years. And Penix is sitting there learning the offense, learning off. Alex Smith is, for me, the real parallel here. A consummate pro who's hasn't reached the heights of Mahomes and Lamar and the great quarterbacks in his contemporaries around him, but he's a really good, solid pro. And I'd imagine a great guy to learn off. There has been such a shift from back when in the day when we first fell in love with the game. For a long time, the protocol, the blueprint being, you get your successor, you let him learn, in he goes. In the last 10, 15 years, it's been a series of first round picks, they have to start straight away. And I know it's easy to make this argument in light of Jordan Love being seemingly such a success, but I quite like it. I quite like the reversion back to, you know what, this guy could be our future for 10 years, and we're going to give him a really, really good foundation to do that, as opposed to we're chucking him in Bo Nix starting for the Broncos week one, getting, you know, blown out. We've got more Christian Ponders, more Zach Wilson, more Sam Darnold kind of situations with first round quarterbacks.
I mean, I am not ruling out, like, I hate the pick. I've said that, but I am not ruling out the prospect of in, say, 3 years' time, the Falcons having the last laugh on this.
Yeah.
I do see the logic, and there's a lot of upsides, Penix. It's not like they've picked someone and I think, this guy's not NFL quality. This guy is never going to do it. And I understand sometimes a team will absolutely fall in love with a guy. And often they're correct. And everyone else who from the outside are wrong because they've had him in the room with their coaches and they see that it all meshes. And maybe Penix just absolutely meshes with everything they want to do. My worry if I was a Falcons fan is the idea of, well, instead of adding an elite starter, because this was a very top-heavy draft, the top half of the first round, especially the top 10 prospects, there was a gulf.
Mm.
So it was all about the top 10 this year to a certain extent, right? If you've got a chance to take one of those top 10 guys and you decide, instead of taking an immediate impact playmaker, I thought they were going to take Dallas Turner, the edge rusher from Alabama. You've got someone there who's an instant impact, helps you right away.
Yeah, and I get it. And so actually on Dallas Turner is a great example because this flurry of offensive picks meant that teams looking for defensive playmakers, difference makers, got a huge amount of value. So we'll get into that in a minute because Turner ended up going, of course, 17 to the Vikes. The Vikes moving in and into that spot, of course. So you hate the Penix pick. I'm with you in that it's probably a mistake, but I can see why, to your point, in a couple of years, they might be having the last laugh. The consequence of that meant that some of these impact players on the offensive side of the ball fell. Roma Dunze, most notably to you guys, the Bears.
Oh, did he? I didn't notice. So I didn't notice.
Propo messaged us today. Propo back editing and producing the show today, which is incredible. I'm amazed that I'm amazed that Propo actually got back from Vegas because I thought he was still there from the Super Bowl, but he's emerged. And then crazy Propo shithousery says he's not going to be able to edit the show. This is in the WhatsApp group. He's not going to be able to edit the show today because you're so smug. Going to be so smug, Ben.
Yeah. Now, I am not feeling smug as a Bears fan. I'm just feeling really, really pleased because, as I said, that top 10 was so packed with elite difference makers that for the Bears to have two picks in the top 10, it's rare for a team to have two picks in the top 10.
Right.
It's even more rare to have one of those as number one, and even more rare again when the team actually isn't that bad. A team that was not a million miles away from the playoffs. Mm. So to get the chance to add those two players, and there was a lot of speculation coming out of Chicago from people who are very much plugged into the organization, saying the Bears were leaning towards trading that pick. Now, obviously, you only decide to trade that pick if when it comes to you, you know the players you desperately want are gone.
Yeah.
And I desperately wanted them to desperately want a difference-making wide receiver. We've been talking about this for weeks and weeks and weeks. There was a top tier of three wide receivers: Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, and of course Marvin Harrison Jr., the most reliable player in the draft. Any team would be lucky to have those three. I think the Bears did absolutely the right thing. The Bears do not have many draft picks this year. It would have been sensible in a lot of ways to trade down and accumulate more draft picks, and you've got more bites of the cherry. But I really feel this year, more than any other year, if you've got two in the top 10, you've got to take it. You take Roma Dunze, you run to the podium and hand that in, because he is such a wonderful player.
Okay, just sticking to the North, with the North for a minute, because we've got a question from Richard Moorcroft. Hey, Richard, is the NFC North the most competitive division all of a sudden? Not necessarily the best, but the most competitive. So just kind of framing, obviously we know what the Bears have done with that handcuff. First round double in the top 10 picks, as Ben said. The Vikes, as expected, making a move for a quarterback, and as expected, that quarterback was J.J. McCarthy. So they trade in and strengthen their hand there. Of course, the Vikes, like the Bears, not a broken team by any stretch. Do you expect McCarthy to start week one?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think they're gonna get him straight in. He's got, I think, compared with the other like top quarterbacks, I think he's got a lower ceiling, but he has got a high floor. I think you can stick him in there because that is a good team already. You know, if it wasn't for Kirk Cousins getting injured, that's a team that I think would have made the playoffs last season.
Yeah.
So he's going into a great situation in the same way I think Caleb Williams is going into a great situation, and it makes the NFC North fascinating. Now, the Vikings,
just the other picks in the North. So the Packers, who we know are another strong team, they strengthen their line with Jordan Morgan, one of this deep tackle class that you've so eloquently talked about over recent weeks in our draft previews, Benny. They're all in the vault if you just want to recap on some of the players that might have fallen your way. And then the Lions, Marek was watching with bated breath, of course. And again, because of this interesting top-heavy offensive draft, another really strong class here in the first round this year we knew was cornerbacks, but we didn't necessarily think that they wouldn't fall. Well, it depends. I mean, Kool-Aid hasn't even gone off the board yet, so he's going to go tonight. But they get the Lions. This is Terrion Arnold in a trade with Dallas. The Bama corner, who you are a big fan of, as you've said, and is a plug-and-play day one starter as well. So everyone in the North has had a good night. Everyone in the North is a viable playoff contender, you would say. So you with Richard, is it the most competitive division in the NFL right now?
Yeah, I think it is. And just to say, we've got great questions that came through on from X/Twitter. And last night, because I was on Twitter all night talking about this.
You were even more Carlson than Carlson on Twitter, by the way, last night.
I know, I was. But there was so many NC show listeners talking about the draft. So I love that. I love it when you guys are staying up with us. I think it is the most competitive. I think it's going to be perhaps the most fun division to watch all season. You're going to have three really young quarterbacks. And you've got Jared Goff, who has just matured into, you know, he's putting on a clinic at certain points last season. Like we got to stop bashing Jared Goff. I say we, I know you've given him a lot of props. I think the NFC North, it's going to be difficult for teams in that division next season, because they're not all going to make it into the playoffs and they are going to take wins off each other. The Detroit Lions are a legitimate Super Bowl contender, but they're now in a division with three legitimate playoff teams. And those, if they lose a couple of games that they were hoping they would not lose, all of a sudden their rankings in the playoffs go down and it's a tougher route to the Super Bowl. It's going to be a fascinating division to watch. The Vikings, you know, the thought was they may have to trade up to get JJ McCarthy. We were talking when we were doing the mock draft, I kept looking at these options and I kept having JJ McCarthy fall to the Vikings in the position that they were already in. And then of course they trade up and get Dallas Turner. They had, I think, the best defensive player on the board, and they've got the quarterback who they coveted. What a spectacular night for the Minnesota Vikings.
Big night for them. Big night for the Bears. What about some of the others? So, as expected, the Commanders go Jaden Daniels at two. I don't want to dwell on that much because we've talked a lot about him in the previous shows, and that was almost as certain as Caleb Williams going to the Bears. But it wasn't as clear-cut with the Patriots and Drake May, right? There was a lot of buzz, and maybe it was being spun by the Pats front office themselves, a lot of buzz that they might deal down, in Belichickian fashion, deal down the pick for and stockpile more. But they didn't. They've taken Drake May. It feels like new iteration, new show in town. It feels like the right move, doesn't it? And Drake May, for all of the fluctuation he's had pre-draft in terms of 1 minute he's the golden boy, then he's falling through mock draft floors, bounced back at the tail end. And now the narrative seems to be, I've heard in more than one place, Ben, Drake May might have the highest ceiling out of all of these quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's getting a little bit carried away.
Yeah, which he doesn't. But yeah, this is the thing with the pre-draft process, where players' fortunes will just fluctuate based on pretty much nothing. And we're consuming all this information. And you could argue we're part of the problem, right? We're talking about these things.
Well,
what is going on at the front office? It may well be that teams' rankings of these quarterbacks may have not changed at any point. The thing that struck me with the Patriots was they made their pick almost immediately. The Commanders took Jaden Daniels, and pretty much straight away it was like the pick is in from the Patriots. That leads me to believe they were shopping that third pick because they were concerned they couldn't get Drake May. You don't make that pick immediately like that unless you like, yeah, this was the guy. And I wonder if they didn't want Jaden Daniels, that his skill set didn't fit what they were going to do, and that if the Commanders took Drake May, then they were looking to trade out of number three.
Yeah, right.
Jaden Daniels wasn't the one. Now, you can say, well, Jaden Daniels is better or Drake May is better. Whatever happens, those two teams, Washington and New England, they got the guys they wanted. I'm absolutely positive of that. Whether it works out for them, I don't know, but they got the guys they wanted. And if you're a fan of either of those teams, at least you know your team is committed to those players, that it's not just like, oh, we'll try and make it work. These were the ones they wanted. So
it's a really interesting
to them now.
I love that scenario where picks don't happen right ahead of you as you thought they would. And obviously in this particular draft, it's the Bears sitting at nine, like, are you kidding me? In a very good way. But then there's the flip side of that, which is, oh, are you kidding me? And I feel that the Chargers taking Joe Alt was that pick, because everybody seemed to think that they were going to go receiver, and the Titans are sitting there at seven, like, we're going to get Joe Alt. And now they got JC Latham. And as you said, look, a hell of a player as well. But Joe Alt felt like he was the standout lineman, right? He was the number one of pretty much every draft board I could see out of the 8 million of them we poured over. That was one of the consensus picks, it felt like, the Titans going there at seven, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, that's one where I'd almost not pencil in. I would write it in ink. Like Caleb Williams at one and Joe Alt to the Tennessee Titans at seven. Now, to be fair, there were plenty of people who report on the Chargers who, over the last few weeks, have been saying, look, Harbaugh loves the trenches. Do not be surprised if he goes offensive line. Yes, wide receiver is a real need, but like, I mean, obviously the hilarious one was that the Chargers are going to take JJ McCarthy.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh, I firmly believe, has been talking up JJ McCarthy
definitely
since he took over at the Chargers because it benefits everyone near the top of the draft if extra quarterbacks are taken. Everyone was going to benefit at the top. The Chargers had potentially were going to benefit, right? Now, as it is, McCarthy wasn't taken when they were on the board, and they were clearly focused on the trenches. Took Jawalt. He's going to fit in very nicely there. It's a bit of a consolation prize for Tennessee, J.C. Latham. But there are some people who prefer J.C. Latham to Jawalt. Mm. Most people prefer Jawalt. But J.C. Latham is not a bad second choice.
He'll be fine. The Giants sandwiched in between them, of course. And they went Malik Nabers at six, which is a pretty good player to be adding to the mix. But Giants fans, I think many felt they would look at quarterback. They were obviously one of the teams that were heavily linked with J.J. McCarthy. You looked at Vegas pre-draft, the two clear favorites to take McCarthy with the Giants or the Vikings. Adams got in touch with us via the mailbag. How did the Giants let Drake May go? They had a golden opportunity to draft someone for the future. They bottled it again. Well, we kind of half answered that. I think the Patriots were resolute and firm, and he's our guy. Then they weren't going to be dealing anyway. But if we flip it more to, well, why didn't they then look at getting McCarthy, Penix, or even Bo Nix, who went 12 as a safety to the Broncos? Why didn't the Giants go quarterback? Are you okay with that?
I am okay with it. Now, there are reports that they were looking to trade up into the top three, that the Giants made inquiries, presumably with the Patriots. And the Patriots, we know they wanted Drake May. And I think the Patriots obviously would have taken that call if Drake May wasn't available. I say take the call, would have taken the trade.
Yeah.
So I think the Giants were looking to be aggressive, but clearly they didn't want JJ McCarthy. Adam, I don't think there's any bottling it. I think what they felt was they would rather go with the quarterback they have and add an elite wide receiver to that offense, mm-hmm. and see what happens, rather than add JJ McCarthy to a pretty anemic offense.
Yeah.
So
I like it too.
I get it completely.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, yes, I think everybody is clear that there are heavy reservations whether Danny Dimes is going to be their quarterback in 3 years' time. But they've paid him big. They've now added, a generational talent kind of receiver, right? Even though it was interesting, the percentage numbers on positional hits or misses in round one, I was reading. That is fascinating. And logical in the sense that linemen, offensive linemen specifically, typically are the most effective, centers in particular, actually.
Very stable, exactly.
Very stable. And I guess if you're taking a blindside tackle and they don't work out on the blindside, you can flip them to right. You might want to do that anyway. Or even down the line to guard, you're still going to get a serviceable pro career out of them. If you've got a receiver and they're a buck, you may get a returner. But I mean, you know, it's boom or bust, right? But so when I say generational talent, I get the asterisks and I get the risk. But adding that star receiver, let's go there next, because the thing that surprised me the most, other than Atlanta doing what they did, was Buffalo doing what they did. Help me understand this. So the Buffalo deal the 28 spot to the Chiefs, and I called it on the show, Ben, so I want extra busy.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
For Xavier, yeah. Were they? Super exciting about that, him being added to that offense. But the Bills do that. Then they trade 32 as well. So Carolina get Leggett, another receiver that you called out as interesting. What are the Bills doing? Or are you going to tell me this is genius, and by the time this show rolls into Saturday morning and the Bills have got a lot of deep, or Sunday morning, I should say, a lot of deep picks and they're pulling out some absolute blinders. But where's their star receiver? Where's the Diggs replacement?
So we've talked a lot about the wide receivers over the last couple of months, and there was an elite three, and then there was a lot of depth beyond that. Mm. But it was mostly, I think there are loads and loads of wide receiver twos, right? Mm. And there's a lot to be said for being a wide receiver two if you're able to pair him with a true wide receiver one rather than force a two into a one. And some of these twos will make it as ones. That is inevitable. I get what they're doing. I don't love it. I probably would have taken a wide receiver in their position. But if they feel, well, do you know what? We've got five or six guys, graded in a pretty similar way. We'll take one in round two. We'll have another bite of the cherry elsewhere and just keep taking these shots and see what we can find. Like, it's, they must have looked at the likes of Ricky Purcell and Leggett and thought, and, you know, Worthy as well, and thought,
not much difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure I agree, but I think that is their logic.
Remind me where you are. Brian Thomas was the other one who went in the end 23rd to the Jags. Where were you on him? Obviously a drop from that, those big three, but was he your four on your board?
Yeah. He was, for me, he was the top one in that second tier.
Yeah. Okay.
And he went pretty much around where I thought I'd had him mocked to the Cowboys, but kind of around that sort of position. So that's the way the wide receivers were taken was kind of how I expected, just not necessarily the teams.
Okay. Steal of the round, other than your Bears getting a Dunze, is it the Raiders getting Brock Bowers where they did?
Very possibly. Now, I'd said I thought he was going to fall in relation to his talent. Like, he's arguably a top 10 talent, and he went 13. So it's not like a massive drop. And we knew there were lots of teams that they just had bigger needs. I think that one is up there. I think Dallas Turner at 17 is fantastic value. And Quinion Mitchell, I love, going to the Philadelphia Eagles at 22. I think those three, in terms of value, are absolutely fantastic, and they should be really pleased. But Brock Bowers, all he does is everything. You know, he's so versatile. He can play like a wide receiver. He can play like a fullback. He can play like a traditional tight end. He can play like a modern tight end. If they've got someone who can get the ball to him, and that's perhaps the issue in Las Vegas at the moment. And I, just on a very slight tangent, I'm all in on the Raiders taking Spencer Rattler this weekend.
Interesting. Okay. And where do you think he's likely to go? Round three?
I feel he's a third rounder. And the thing is, I'm not sure who else is going to want a quarterback right now. I don't know. Maybe Atlanta are going to get another one. But the Raiders feel like, if this was kind of musical chairs, there's not many people still kind of like looking for a chair. So
yeah,
I can imagine a third round. They need to add something at wide receiver, at quarterback. I say that everyone should take a quarterback every year, either undrafted free agent or in the draft, see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
They need someone, because it's all well and good having Brock Bowers, but I'm not sold by their quarterback room at all.
Yeah, I out of all of the teams that clearly needed to look for one, we talked about this on the show, most comfortable with the Raiders situation this year anyway, right?
Yes, but yes.
Fair point. It's quite funny looking at, actually, before I say that, let's just get your take on Bo Nix. So Nix was, as we say, in that McCarthy tier and Penix tier below the big three. The Broncos taking him, a same question. Are they going to start in week one?
I think they may have to, because there's not a lot ahead of him. Now, Bo Nix is like a poor man's Drew Brees. So Sean Payton has been enamored with him pretty much the whole offseason. And it was all really about, you know, will they take him at 12? Will they trade down because they feel he's still going to be available? Would they try and trade up in the second round and get him then potentially? They clearly felt, we can't take that risk. And you've got this really interesting situation where they were picking one ahead of the Raiders, the, you know, a hated divisional rival. And the idea of them thinking, oh, well, maybe we can get Nix somewhere else, which is harder to do, and then the Raiders taking him would have really stuck in their craw. So maybe it's a bit of a reach in terms of like the talent level that Bo Nix has. But they were forced into it a little bit, because there was every chance that the Raiders would take him. And he is a fit for a Sean Payton offense.
Yeah.
So he is in a bad situation, though, because that Broncos team is a mess.
Yeah.
But Sean Payton does know what he's doing when it comes to offense. And I think Bo Nix can be good. He's another older guy. He played a lot of seasons at Auburn. And I'm in a group with a lot of college football guys based in the UK. And I'd said season before last, you can't fix Nix.
Nice.
And I was firmly on this. Like, he's got so many flaws that we're never going to see him put together a season where it's like, oh, do you know what? He looked like an NFL player. Well, last season he transferred to Oregon. He looked like an NFL player. If the Broncos get that version of him, then they've got their starter.
Okay. And also, he's going into maybe the most intriguing quarterback room in the NFL right now with Zach Wilson, Ben DiNucci, and Jarek Stidham as well. I mean, that's
Zach Wilson.
That's immense. Zach Wilson's looking at that pick like, oh, you're kidding me. Okay. Last but not least, and we are going to, of course, be back next week with more when we've looked at all the rest of the draft and all the deep dives we need to do there. Just in terms of Bucky Brooks's grades. Now, I remember years and years ago, Benny, you celebrating the great Bucky Brooks to me, saying he was one of your faves. And Bucky Brooks, straight off the bat, is grading everybody. Most teams did pretty well. This is what I love. Two or three things. I love the fact he gave the Bengals a C. Amarius Mims, they got the Georgia tackle, just to really, really annoy Propo with that. But this is great. The Browns, who obviously didn't have a pick, they get a D grade from Bucky. And the Falcons got a C. So the Falcons were only graded one higher than the Browns, who didn't actually weren't able to make a pick.
Yeah, I really think the Browns had a better draft day than the Falcons.
Yeah, right. You would have graded them higher.
Yeah. Now, I said on Twitter yesterday, you know, it's always stupid to say, oh, this team won the draft. And especially if you're trying to say it in the first round, but the Bears won the draft. So I have full sympathy with anyone making grades like with their gut right now.
Yeah.
And it looking to the rest of the world like, huh. And the thing is,
Bucky's given a lot of A's out, to be fair. So he's kind of,
that first round, especially the top half, it should be full of A's, right? Because there's a lot of people out there and they're able to take the best player available. And yeah, there are some fantastic talents. Now, obviously there's a difference between, you might give a pick a C, or you might give a player a C, but the pick an A because of how, like, the value that they got.
Right,
or something.
Right. All the other way around.
But, yeah. But the idea of that Falcons pick being a C, I think you've either got to love it or hate it. You're going to be like, yeah, I think it's fine. I think you've got to be all in on it. Like, yes, yeah, this is the strategy, or you hate it, rather than, yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm going to fly the Falcons flag. I'm going to go with my gut. I quite like it. And I'm not trying to be cute or contrary or hot takey. I quite like it. I reckon it might end up being, as you say, one of those ones we look at and think, ah, smart. Hey, tell me about Chop Robinson. For selfish interests, of course, going to the Finns at 21.
Oh, yeah, I really like Chop Robinson. Physical, versatile guy. Penn State just kind of churn these players out, which I absolutely love. He's going to be a leader on that defense. Like, if you haven't watched highlights of him and you're a Dolphins fan and you're thinking, who's this guy with the crazy name? And as we said in the last draft show we did, he's called Chop because his nickname was Pork Chop because he was such a big baby, which I love. And the fact that Chop has stuck, physical guy, he is going to be, he's like the AFC East is going to be fascinating. And I think the dimension that he adds to the Dolphins is going to be brilliant. I think that's a really great pick, really good value at 21.
Okay, a couple other bits of business. Obviously, the Cards are doubled down. Darius Robinson was the other player they got. Marvin Harrison, as expected, going at 4 overall. Darius Robinson, the Missouri defensive tackle. So they feel like they've had a good day at the office. Absolutely love the Ravens pick as well. Strengthening the secondary. Nate Wiggins, a player that you were bigging up in that corner class, going to 30 to the Ravens. They've got to be laughing about that.
Yeah, great, great value. I mean, I think the Ravens are still smarting from that AFC Championship beatdown. And there's a long wait for them to have to pick. Weirdly, my daughter came back from a PE lesson the other day. She's 12. She came back and they were running, and she was running with like a friend of a friend who she hadn't really had a conversation with. And they ended up, they were talking about the NFL and how, like, she's a big She's a big Rams fan, but her favorite player is Kyle Hamilton. I want to know, like, how many 12-year-old girls out there are like, I love Kyle Hamilton. I love hard-hitting safeties. So much respect for this. But anyway, that Ravens secondary, that's a big boost to them. I love Nate Wiggins. I think he's going to be brilliant, and I think Ravens fans should be thrilled.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Brilliant, Ben. In 30 minutes and change, I think we've taken care of business, which means we can get you on some kind of drip and then 44 hours of sleep. We've got to go all again tonight, mate. So rest up, enjoy. Brilliant stuff. Hit Ben on Twitter as well. Tweets from Ben. There's lots of extra stuff there. We're going to push this out on YouTube as well as on the pod channels. We're back next week. Ben will be back with a more complete view once the draft is done. Ed Mallion in the house as well, former athletic director. Ed Mallion, as in The Athletic. Maybe he was an athletic director as well, but at The Athletic. And long-standing fans will know Ed's work back in the day. And I'm delighted. I had dinner with him in Vegas for the Super Bowl, and got to come back on the show. And he's in Chicago now. He's going to be back. I'm looking forward to getting his take on things.
He's a big Bears fan, he's going to have enjoyed last night.
I think he deliberately said, I can come on the week after the draft, knowing what was going to go down, quite frankly. Keep your questions coming in. We'll get in with all those episodes next week on the show. Some more draft questions, more draft takes at the NC Show across Twitter, Insta, Facebook, and of course, YouTube as well. Shout out YouTube crew. If you haven't subscribed, we're on there as well, the NC Show. Video from the show, bonus video as well. Go get involved, subscribe, show us a bit of love. Benny, you're a legend. Thanks, bud.
Cheers. I'm going to get some sleep.
Do it.
Sports Social Podcast Network.